Okay, hello everyone. Let's get started. Today we have the second guest lecture by Joni Kettunen from Digia, and we're privileged to have you here. Joni, thanks for your time again. Just a couple of words. Remember this Thursday we have the final demo assignment session for the XSL and the SOAP assignments. Be there because we'll also briefly discuss a bit of a wrap-up for this course, and we might say a few words also how you could prepare for the exam. Yeah, be there. We could do the wrap-up maybe in the start of the session. And I hope it's going well with your assignments. There's still a bit of a time to finish those up. I heard some of the problems, for example, in sorting the output alphabetically, but just as a bit of a suggestion to just Google how to put those in an alphabetic order instead of in the order where they are appearing. So you might find the answer there. But anyways, let's get started. So Joni, stage is all yours.
Thank you, Henri. Hi, I'm Joni Kettunen, and I work for Digia, and we are 1,000 people company. In Jyväskylä, there are 130 or something people. We are recruiting people, so the numbers are changing. And I'm going to tell you something about XML, what I've done with it in my work, and what's the purpose of XML in programmers' tool box, I'd say. What I'm concentrating to is to give you some kind of perspective how programmer or senior software developer is using the XML. Of course, if you are some kind of leader or if you are trying to use some systems, the perspective for XML is quite different. If you are using just web-based pages, you don't care if it's HTML5 or any other technology, as long as it works. So one of the skills is XML, which you are learning in this course, and HTML, and it's HTML5, which is currently in use for web pages and mobile devices, is the latest standardized version. And some of you may know SQL. It's query language used for talking to databases. If you want to show something on the web page and the data is stored at the database, you need to get it with SQL or LinQ or other query language. And of course, programmers use different programming languages. I've used C#, Java, JavaScript, VB.NET, but not Ruby. It's there because it's fun. Not in work, I mean. And where I've encountered XML, it's in information transfer mostly, or configuration files. And information transfer might be between client and server, or it might be between all kinds of systems. One system is sending data and another system is receiving it. And of course, user interface. VPF is Microsoft's way of designing user interface with XML variant called XAML. And some of you might know HTML5, and Silverlight is also Microsoft XML variant for user interfaces, but it's a little bit truncated or smaller version from the VPF. It was meant to be for website publishing, but it was discontinued 2 years ago or something. So, XML might be essential skill for you, depending on your, your work picture. If you are one of my project managers was leading group where they decided about one XML standard. So there it might be important, but mostly it's about programmers work to know details about XML. Here are a few examples. I'm going to talk about electricity meter and how it communicated with system I was developing, one of those developers. And then I was creating a library management system, and there was the client-server model where the server was sending web services as a, SOAP messages. And the XML standard I was mentioning earlier about my project manager, it's DATEX standard. It's about alert location on the roads. For example, in Finland, if there's something, ice or some other condition on road, holes on the road or car crashes, there's standardized message which is sent through a system, and this message can be relayed to police and radio stations so they know that there are some kind of troubles at main roads. And user interfaces, I'm going to show you a small demo about that. And then I'm going to, before that, I'm going to introduce you some tools which can be used for XML work or creating the user interface. Here's an example of electricity meter I was creating software to. We had, there's Iskra at the top left corner, and it's manufacturer in Ukraine, and they made these electricity meters, and it had a web service interface. Most electricity meters talk using GSM network. Some might talk through electricity grid or IP addresses, but mostly it's GSM, and they have some kind of standardized communication systems, but rarely XML. But this was web service commands, and it was fun to do, actually. What we get from the electricity meter is mostly data, how much electricity is it is used, and in households, it's usually one-hour chunks, how much each user is using for each hour, and it's summed up, and it's read usually if there's no other need every month, but if you need real-time data, it's sometimes read more often. And of course, there are tariffs if you are paying regular rate or cheaper electricity during night and more expensive during day, and so on. There are other packages too. And how you implement software for electricity meter? We got one kind of half-made standard. Ask this kind of message, and you should get this kind of reply. But we didn't get that, so we got SOAP message tracer, which actually is middleman in the message delivery. For programmer, it looks something like this. Instead of talking directly to the electricity meter, our meter reading software is using middleman, and it shows messages like this, standardized XML messages. We send request, and they send response. It was quite clear for us that the messages we were receiving wasn't good, so we tried to implement the interface as far as we could, and then we asked what's wrong. And the Ukrainian company said, oh, nobody should be using that. That's only a beta version. So they sent us new versions each week or 2 weeks, and we made implementations when they got more code into it. And what we did was implement the driver using mock data. So we actually asked for electricity meter data, and we got some kind of message like this, and we saved that message, not this request, but the response. And then we made the program to get always the same response, and we could use the response in our electricity metering software and sum it up and show graphs and so on. And we made tests, test-driven development, to see that our implementation was working okay. And finally, we were able to communicate directly to the meters, and then they other company was buying more meters and installing them, and our software was reading the meters for the customers. During the work life, you encounter all kinds of XML messages, I could say, and this is one kind of way to transfer data when you are trying to get book information. And there's a little bit, well, redundancy in the tags, as you see. And this is a real-life example. It had not this book in it, but it had several levels and always repeating the root node name and all the lower node names. And we noticed this just because, well, in metering life, electricity meters, everything is compact and small, and they are using abbreviations, so data transfer is quite fast. But in library management systems, another world altogether, but XML messages, they don't care about message sizes because they are trying to communicate through wide and easy internet. And we noticed that if we get large chunks of data, we get too much data. And this is just a reminder that when you are doing your work and all kind of exams and so on, you have to keep in mind that there are people who don't know anything about theory, and they are just trying to get along, and they are inventing all kinds of things. Try to avoid that and give advice to people who don't know. At the management level, they don't care, as long as it works. But as a developer, you should be proud of your work and make something beautiful. And here are some examples how to reduce the message size. Good XML message depends largely on what you want to tell and who do you want to tell it to. First line here is somebody is asking what kind of delivery do you want, email, SMS, or mail. Let's say it could be from library system. You have some kind of paste, your books are going to, you need to renew your books, or they are so much too late, and you get email message or SMS to your cell phone. Shorter way to do it is just to mention this is delivery, and you put 1.0.1, comma 1. And that takes so much less space, but it's harder to read. And of course, you can go to the next step, the delivery, to say it's 5, which is a bit sum. You got to look it up from Google if you don't know it, but it's something like trying to calculate all kind of Boolean variables in a one integer number, and when you have lots of data, it can reduce the message size, but it's very hard to read. There are, for mobile life, if you are having a bad field or narrow bandwidth, this is one thing you have to consider. how much do you spend time making good XML messages? How much time do you spend trying to make it smaller, more compact in real world? Here are some tools. In Wikipedia, there's been recently a comparison of XML editors, and there are some prices and which are alive and which are no longer supported. But here are some differences for actual XML tools, for XML Spy, for example. It's not easy to write broken XML with XML tools. And you can check for schemas if your XML is correct. Otherwise, if you are using just Notepad Plus or some kind of text editor which highlights the XML, you have to run it through some kind of system which validates your XML if you have some kind of schema. In my current work, we have some kind of custom XML, and there is no schema because they are used in, for example, configuration sections. And it would be redundant work to make schema for like 20 lines of XML. Then, a few places where XML are used. As I mentioned earlier, library management system in public libraries are using XML or XAML for user interface design. And on the library, personnel are using it, not the customers who are borrowing the books. It's the place where you catalog the books and try to keep up who is borrowing where and how much fines are for each customer. Then there is Arena, Yle, which was made for Silverlight, easy streaming and very efficient way to give some kind of programs to users. And of course, old way to do Windows Phone apps was using XAML. Now they accept HTML5 and JavaScript, which I think it's a better way. And then there's two projects which I can mention. I did work for Finnish Transport Agency, HATI, which was Häiriötietojärjestelmä, which is that system which says if there is something wrong on the road. It can be snow on the road, holes on the road, just check some lights on the road, heavy traffic, some animals running, or any kind of accident kind of thing in there. And it's pretty, the HATI was the original version of the system, and later they implemented T-Loic, which is a little bit larger. It contains this messaging system, but also all kind of control system for cameras in tunnels and trying to see some on-the-road cameras. There are dozens of them around Finland, and trying to get it all together. And the user interface was used, was created with XAML and JavaScript and all kind of third-party components. I've been talking about VPF, which is XML-based way to do user interfaces. And the thing in it is that it's vector-based and easy to scale up and down. And HATI, which was on the previous slide, was old system. And when they made it first time, they had something like 19-inch or 20-inch monitors and quite young people. And a few decades or some later, they had 30-inch monitors, six of them, and people getting old. So they needed some kind of user interface upgrade. And I changed the Windows Forms user interface for VPF, and there's a slider or number. You can scale it up if you have bad eyesight. One thing which is a little bit challenging is trying to put elements in one place and keep them there. You have to think about some kind of boxes and divide them, or some kind of tables, or try to stack them on the right or left side. And here's one example with multiple elements. This is kind of thing programmers are thinking when they are trying to create software. Again, if you are in a meeting with some kind of deciding people, boss level, or some business management sitting at a chest of money, they want to see what you are doing and how fast you can implement it. And then there's themes or styles you can use. Here's page that looks, it's everything it's implemented in it, but it might be that half of the functionality is missing. So you can use style which looks very rough and sketchy instead of this finished style, so the management people understand that there's job to be done instead of using this finalized look. And if you want to customize the user interface, you can use same kind of styling techniques that's used on HTML, CSS kind of styles. You can separate them in different files or change style of each element. These have buttons with small rounding on the corners, but you can make straight corners or completely round buttons. You can customize each element almost as much as you like. That's the theming of it, and as I mentioned, the resizing this picture is the hard part. You have to decide which elements get more height and width, because when the user is using small laptop or big screen, some elements need more space and are more important. So scaling up and stretching items, it's one part of the programmer's work. User designers and all kind of managers can give their input, and most important people to talk to is the end user. You have to find the people who are using the product and talk to them. If you are creating product which looks nice for you and the managers who are paying for it, it might be nice to make that project, but the end user is one who is using 8 hours a day for the product, so that's the person you are going to target to. And if you are not seeing that during the development, you should ask for one or several, because people have different kinds of opinions. About tools for user interface creation. Visual Studio is a kind of Eclipse for Java. It's place for programming and creating the code, and you can do simple interfaces with it. But Blend is the tool for customizing the components, using animations, creating that kind of stuff. And the division is, in Microsoft world, coding vs. storyboard. Coding is what I do, and storyboard is just moving from one page to another or creating animations. And you can extend the tools with additional items. I have few installed on my machines, my Visual Studio, which add more content, help you create better code, or better actually reduce your mouse clicks, or give you more information which isn't available at the default. And the pricing for tools depends what you are going to do, but the basic professional version for Visual Studio is just €657 if you compare it to the price of computer and price of some other workers tools. For example, if somebody is driving a taxi car, it costs few. How about new BMW costs, or E-series, Mercedes-Benz. It's a little bit more than this, but these are just tools. When you are studying at the university, you can get the full version with no price or a few dimes and everything in it. But if you are just working, like me, you have to go for the next best version, and the prices vary each year. A few years back, the full version was something like 11,000 euros, and because the competition, the prices have been coming down. Here's the blend tool. It has, it's a little bit small picture, but in the middle, there's page you are designing, and at the left side, there are all elements in it, and at the bottom, there is the XAML code, which say which elements are placed on which parts of the page. And then there's Visual Studio, which I mostly use. And you can choose between the XAML side at the bottom of the where's the red and blue, and actual code. And all the code files are at the right side. And the components you can add are at the left side. And most often, the user, what you see is what you get kind of design is not shown, and you see just the code. It's easier that way. You have to keep in mind what you are doing, and it's this, well, most of the pages are quite simple. And then I'm going to show you a small demo about creating user interface and how these parts of the screen are located. The actual working code I've been doing earlier, so I won't be writing that. That would be a little bit boring and out of this course. And what this program does, it loops through one string. It this is kind of simplified version of adding strings to one another. Sometimes people create XML pages or XAML pages or web pages through code. So they add just one tag and another tag and then content, another tag and content and tag. And this is kind of test. What should you do? Which way is faster and which way is slower in programming-wise? And there's just 1,000, I remember, maybe numbers, and then comma-separated list. In first version, the comma-separated list adds comma each time there's if loop when you're trying to see it. Is it last element or is it not? Second one is that you always add the comma at the end of the list, and when you're at the when the list ends, you end up with one extra comma, and you deleted that, so you don't have to check all the time. And then there is a string builder, which is framework element, which does this kind of work a lot faster than programmers usually can do. Here are demo elements, how the XAML says to the user interface there's one kind of object on the screen, and what do you have in it, what's the name, all kinds of properties. Mostly, it's as you suspect, every text is aligned on the left-hand side, and you have just a few properties, like buttons have click. If you click, it goes to the code side and do some work. And now the demo. Here are two languages which I used to create the demo previously. And then we create new project. Add new project. VBS. Thing. Oops. Let's make it loop thing. In Visual Studio, it creates a default page, which can contain all the user interface elements. And because it contains none, the page is empty. And when you are designing the page, you have to think, well, I show the ready version to give you some idea. Here's the page. You have to think about boxes. And on the left-hand side, it says it's 216 pixels width. And actually, in code, it says it's auto width, which means system automatically calculates the maximum width for this minimum width for this size using element with maximum width. So it's this text and tries to calculate it, and there it is. And other columns are divided evenly for the rest of the space. So if you stretch this screen wider, these texts, which are all the width, don't change. Only the right-hand side. And that's the buttons are located in this grid. And in the grid, you have to define all the row elements and the column elements and their widths. And you have to decide which row is the one that stretches up when you try to stretch the screen on each dimension. Well, I think it's simple, but when I've been explaining it to my colleagues who haven't seen it, they are like, what? And it takes some time, so it's just one grid with few columns and few rows, and you have to think about the extra space which isn't shown anywhere, like this unused space between the string builder and buttons. And then there are the elements which can be, well, let's make it Solution Explorer. Yep. Grid row definitions. I think I have to increase the font size. Something like this. And as I add some rows, now there's no definition of which one is, it's just dividing evenly all the rows and all the columns which are now not existing yet, but let's make a few. Grid columns, column definitions, and column definition. And instead of using this part in here, I'll just end that tag there. And if I want to minimize the height, I get told that just hate this auto. And height of the first row is now zero because there's no element in it. And if I add label in here, to zoom in there also. It wants to have some kind of label. Ah, I'm not within the grid. That's what's wrong. Now we're talking. Zoom in a little bit. And there's no text in the label, so let's say content is something. And now the height of the row, first row, is automatically height of the label. And next label, for default, this says label is located at row, first row in first column. But if I want to go to the next row, I have to define grid row. And row one. I'll just check my first is loop count. Okay. And then there's if within loop. If I don't define the grid row for the next label, it will go over the first label like it's in the same location. And then if there are more labels than there are rows, I can run the project. Now let's make this a default project. Set as a start project, yep, and then run. It's compiling the code and showing the code. There are the elements. And they are located at the top left corner. If some kind of, I think it was string builder. Now there are not enough rows because we have the first row which contains just one label, and then we have the next few lines which do contain, well, let's put it this way. Three labels, one line to stretch, and last row for buttons. Keyboard is a little bit different than at work, so you can end the label like this. The tool is getting rid of the last part when I add the slash. You can, well, when you do done this a lot of times, it's faster to type button and content to it. But you can also use the toolbox and get elements from here. But it takes a lot of time when you're dragging and dropping and they are falling in wrong parts and you're thinking, oh, no, not there. And you have to add some properties. You can add the properties using let's do that. These properties windows, if you want, instead of writing it in code. Like there's the loop count, which is where it's located, row 0, column 0. It's not shown because it's a default. But the next element says it's row 1, and there's black marker to say that something has changed. and also where the text is aligned and where the elements is aligned, and contents, text style, all kind of these details. But we were doing string builder. And then there was content. Yeah. And we can see that they are located at the top of the screen, and the width is everything because there are no columns so far, just one column definition, which is not used. So the tool is showing this is redundant code. It's in grayed out because it doesn't do anything. But let's make some of these with an auto. Put the button on the grid and row, and 4 was the empty, and 5 is at the bottom, and let's say column 1. The index starts from 0, so the first column is 0, then it's there 1 and 2. And then we can copy this and say next column, and we can run the code and see the locations of the elements. 3 columns for the text. There's the string builder, and then there's buttons. There's no functionality under them yet. Then we need some kind of text elements. I can a little bit speed this up by copy paste. Let's have some text boxes. Oh well, just one text box and a few labels. Yes, text box, and yes, there's the results. Sorry, wrong project. There's my main window. Loop count is how many times you are trying to add the XML string or any string length. It's right in there, 1,000 times. And then you can add, I can add those finally aligned. 1, 2, 3 results. Let's put the results and take the labels out and check. Which one is missing? Last one is missing. String builder result. Quit roll 4. Should be there. Content is 0. This element is yes, we are missing one last row definition. Of course. Yes, this element is located a little bit too low. Row number 3. Okay, this is how it looks. Use of interface for counting how much time it takes to create this kind of loops. And when you want to add some code, you can go to the user interface side and double click the button to create a point where code is run. Or you can see the same functionality. There has been added button click event here, which directs to the code and creates point where the action can be made. And then there is another button. And then I'll copy paste some code because I don't think you really want to see me typing this. It's just C# code looping through. It's creating string which contains question mark and then comma after it. And in one loop, it's just asking if we have reached the end. If not, then add the comma. In the next loop, we are adding it always, and we trim it out in the end. And there's the string builder which handles memory better than the ones before. We can add this file to the project. There's code which counts how many milliseconds it uses when we push the button for all. Oh. And then if I'm copy-pasting code or using code which hasn't been used anywhere before, the coding tool asks, you are missing some kind of references, do you want to add them? And I say, yes, of course. And it helps a lot because I don't have to add here all these kind of VPS looper demo using this and that. And then we can run the code. And we have another string builder button. Doesn't have functionality yet, but this all button has. So that if we add few more characters in the string, you can get some times. And if there's too big variable here, it takes like 1 minute or so. So we can check that it takes a lot of resources. Its CPU is running high and the memory usage is clearing memory, this yellow line, garbage collection. And actually I'd like to stop it now and then copy the code for the string builder, which is a lot faster. We are nearing the end of the demo. So with the values like 10,000, there are some numbers for the traditional way, but still zero for string builder. And if we are running string builder with the value which is stuck 100,000, it doesn't show anything, but 1 million is shown just few milliseconds. Depending on the CPU usage and memory usage, there's a little variation how much time it takes. So I think, was it 10,000, which got it stuck and takes about a minute to run through. This is one simple user interface demo, how to use XML creating user interfaces. Designing the user interface isn't that hard if you get your mind to it and you have to think about how the elements work with each other. And after that, all things are coming to place. Thinking about how much it costs for do work like this, well, not demo, but actually work, it costs a lot, but there are all kinds of proprietary system, Finnish systems, which need to be done, which can't be or shouldn't be done abroad because foreigners don't know our laws or customs or how people try to react to all kinds of stuff. For example, if you're having the library system is one example. I was in a company which creates library systems for like 80% of our public libraries in Finland. So it makes sense to pay for some coders to create software when there are users like 1,000 or so. And then they pay up for our work. And of course, there are lots of, I think it's on, depends on your business area. Banks are heavily on Finnish kind of stuff. You can't buy anything for Finnish banking because we have Finnish laws. You can customize systems from USA or Europe, but it's very hard. Or all kinds of systems which are near to our legislation or culture. Didn't run. Let's skip that and go to the conclusion. I've studied here at the University of Jyväskylä most of my university time, and one thing which is important, which university can give to you, is that you get basic understanding how things work, not just one technique. So it's irrelevant if you are talking about HTML5, XML, XAML, SOAP, web service. You are trying to construct one kind of structure. And not all the schools are giving this kind of high-level theoretical information. And it changes your thinking. And then choosing the right tools is very important because you have to be productive. I could write this using Notepad, but it wouldn't be as efficient, and I could make mistakes which would be seen only when the project was run. But here, the Visual Studio is telling me all the errors I'm doing while I'm coding it. So if I do the mistakes, the user interface says, oh, don't do that, or it won't compile, and it saves up time. And as I said, in the first place, depending on your role in the company, XML might have high meaning in your role, or it might not. There are some people who are specializing in different techniques within a company, but usually most of the people do most everything, or at least understand everything, if you are trying to be more than just regular from 8 to 16, 8 to 4 p.m. worker. So you need to theory and practice to get things done. you have any questions? I was running out of cute cats and cute dogs, so I had this. Depends on company and customer a lot. Some customers have very detailed specifications and we just do what they ask. But usually it's more like we want something like this and we are giving some suggestions. Would you like to have some like four buttons or actually we are trying to understand what they need. Like Henry Ford was asking, what do you want? Faster horses. So he didn't get one, but car. So we have to find the end user and ask what do they need. In library systems, they want to serve the customer, give them best books in short time. So it's essential to get very fast search criteria doing the work, so you don't have to wait for 15 seconds if they're running query. Where is the latest book from our greatest author? So, I don't know, it takes time. And that's not their work. It's we have to create great tools for them, and it's a kind of game. If we are trying to push out our own product, we can decide what we are doing. And if we are selling out projects, we are selling out our time and our work, and we are trying to make customer happy. It's not always the best product I could make. But sometimes they want some kind of funny elements in it. They want bright colors, which I don't like, but they want. So it depends. Defining what we are going to do is, there are two ways to do it. Either people with funny shirts and ties are sitting around the table and trying to decide what to do, and then developers get the package and trying to find out what were they thinking. And another way to do it is they say roughly, we want something like this, and there are like 3 to 5 developers who are thinking how we should do it. And then we are trying to decide with some kind of human who is responsible for the product, and the developers are trying to ask, do you want it made this way? Do you want this kind of feature? Do you want it to, what are the attributes? Does it have to be fast or does it have to be good looking?
So?
Yeah. Yeah? Desktop application. Yeah, you asked about desktop applications. There are being developed a lot of desktop applications because it depends on company. Some companies are working on web-based applications and it's running on quicksand. You have to be fast. You have to give products which are beautiful to the customers in no time. Marginals are low. There are lots of web developers. Technologies are very wide. But if you are doing desktop applications, you have only few technologies for the product. But interfaces to other systems, there are like dozens of techniques, JSON, SOAP messages in XML. There's proprietary systems sending some kind of strings delimitered with comma or some kind of fixed size files at the position 272. There might be K or I, and it means something. So I'm working at the bank sector now, and we are doing desktop application because it's fast. It can do a lot of more things than the web-based thing could do, and you can customize it more. because in web-based applications there are restrictions in sizes and you can't optimize because there's always the web browser trying to restrict you or slow down the process. And if you are doing a lot of calculations or saving files to the, for example, if you are trying to print out reports or open up something through web browser, it's a bit complicated, but using desktop applications, it's okay. Can't, because it depends on company. If you are doing some product or products which are only desktop applications, you see the world through, everything is desktop applications. There's companies which don't do any desktop applications. And of course, there are mobile applications too. I've been working mostly on desktop applications or some kind of variant. The library management system was running on browser. It was distributed like click once principle. The administrator at their website, or actually at their server side, said we have to update now, and during early in the morning or late at the day, he clicked and everything was updating. It depends a lot. When I was working for the traffic, what was it called? The Liikenne, about the Hattie project, it was hard to find the end users because there were 12 people using it in Finland, or 20 at the most. So it was hard to get the end users any response because they were doing the real work. But when we were doing library management systems, or I was doing them, there are 300 stations at the Tampere area, and the municipalities near it. So it was quite easy to find one library worker from there, and from small library and big library and medium-sized library, and of course from the different regions. And when you get the feedback from the library people, they are wonderful. They don't ever say anything bad about it. Like one time I was just listening, one kind of, they were talking about new features for customers, and it was all free and they get coffee and so on. And one library person said, well, we have this one kind of thing. It's not actually a problem, but we don't get any messages when books are getting late. And people, and the woman at the front asked, do you mean SMS messages or email? Neither one. So my colleague was dialing fast to the people who did set up the system and said, how does it look like configurations? Oh, nothing has been set. How long has it been running? 6 months. And they were, this is not a problem, but we have just a little minor thing. And if you send the email, do you have everything running? Oh, yeah, it's fine. They are always correct, great customers. But also when you're trying to get feedback from them, they are thinking about what they want. And with just minor additions here and there, you get happy customers. It's a great feeling. Well, the worst kind of thing would be if you are trying to develop a system and you can't see the customer like at all, and you are talking to the middleman who talks to the customer, or talks to the middleman who talks to the customer. So we are trying to make something that for in banking life, some companies are producing all banking services for smaller banks, and they are middlemen. And it's hard to get the feedback from the end user in those cases. But with bigger banks, you can get feedback and go on site and ask how things are going. Well, if you want to, thank you. If you want to work at Digia, you can find us from the internet. We are trying to get good people with right attitude. So it doesn't, if you are looking for some job or something, you can always apply. It's the attitude that counts, not the experience. Because if you want to learn, and you're a good guy, you can get in. There have been a lot of young people coming in lately. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Täältä saa sitten heijastimia ja namia, jos haluaa, kun lähtee pois. Mariannea ja Digia heijastimia. Pimeään yöhön.
Kiitoksia, Nathan.